I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole, the old familiar sting. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of dirt. I will let you down, I will make you hurt. I wear this crown of thorns upon my liar's chair, full of broken thoughts I cannot repair. Beneath the stains of time, the feelings disappear. You are someone else, I am still right here. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of dirt. I will let you down, I will make you hurt. If I could start again, a million miles away, I would keep myself, I would find a way.
This night, what gathers us here? If you have ever believed that love inevitably leads to betrayal, this night says it doesn't. If you have ever believed that some people can't be redeemed, if you have ever believed that forgiveness wears out,
this night says it won't.
If you have ever believed that you aren't worth saving,
this night says you are.
If you have ever believed that you don't deserve freedom,
this night says you do.
If you have ever believed that fear, anger, hate, and despair will always win,
this night says they won't.
This night says love wins. This night, love gathers us here.
For he grew up before him like a young plant and like a root out of dry ground. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him. nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by others, a man of suffering and acquainted with infirmity. And as one from whom others hide their faces, he was despised, and we held him of no account. Surely he has borne our infirmities and carried our diseases, yet we accounted him stricken, struck down by God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the punishment that made us whole, and by his bruises we are healed. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. We have all turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all.
While he was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at the table, a woman came with an alabaster jar of very costly ointment of nard. And she broke open the jar and poured ointment on his head. But some were there who said to one another in anger, "Why was the ointment wasted in this way?" But Jesus said, "Let her alone. Why do you trouble her? She has performed a good service for me. For you always have the poor with you, and you can't show kindness to them whenever you wish. But you will not always have me. She has done what she could. She has anointed my body beforehand for its burial." Then Judas Iscariot, who was one of the 12, went to the chief priests in order to betray him to them. When they heard it, they were greatly pleased and promised to give him money. So he began to look for an opportunity to betray him.
Then Jesus went to the place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." He took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee and began to be grieved and agitated. Then he said to them, "I am deeply grieved, even to death. Remain here and stay awake with me." And going a little further, he threw himself on the ground and prayed, "My Father, is it possible? Let this cup pass from me. Yet not what I want, but what you want." Then he came to his disciples and found them sleeping, and he said to Peter, "So, could you not stay awake with me 1 hour?
While he was still speaking, suddenly a crowd came, and the one called Judas, one of the 12, was leading them. He approached Jesus to kiss him, but Jesus said to him, "Judas, is it with a kiss that you are betraying the Son of Man?" Then they seized him and led him away, bringing him into the high priest's house. But Peter was following in a distance.
When they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat among them. Then a servant girl, seeing him in the firelight, stared at him and said, "This man also was with him." But he denied it, saying, "Woman, I do not know him." A little later, someone else, on seeing him, said, "You also are one of them." But Peter said, "Man, I am not." Then, about an hour later, still another kept insisting, "Surely this man also was with him, for he is a Galilean." But Peter said, "Man, I don't know what you were talking about." At that moment, while he was still speaking, the cock crowed. The Lord turned and looked at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said to him, "Before the cock crows today, you will deny me 3 times. And he went out and wept bitterly.
They took Jesus to the high priest, and all the chief priests, the elders, and the scribes were assembled. Peter had followed him at a distance, right into the courtyard of the high priest, and he was sitting with the guards, warming himself at the fire. Then the high priest stood up before them and asked Jesus, "Have you no answer? What is it that they testify against you?" But he was silent and did not answer. Again, the high priest asked him, "Are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One?" As soon as it was morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council. They bound Jesus, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate. Pilate asked him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" He answered him, "You say so." Then the chief priests accused him of many things. Pilate asked him again, "Have you no answer? See how many charges they bring against you." But Jesus made no further reply, so that Pilate was amazed.
Last few weeks in worship, we've been looking at idolatry, kind of a big scary word. Idolatry at one level is raising something up that is not God to the place of God in terms of our time, our allegiance. And it's easy to list those things off in our culture. There's money, there's stuff, there's power, there's a way so many things that are less than God we spend all our time with. The other way idolatry works is for us to project that which is smaller than God onto God. And this is a lot more common because we can't imagine the reality of God. All we can do is project our own human stuff onto God. And that is great when we project love and compassion and mercy and justice. But oftentimes we project our prejudices, our hatreds. Sometimes we think that the God that we project onto baptizes our own stuff. God baptizes my position in culture. God baptizes my color, my gender, my tribe, my nation, my flag, my company. And that allows me and gives me permission to hurt somebody else because they're less than me. Idolatry is most difficult to let go of when it wears the garments of religion. Because we can't tell what's true and what's idolatry. The song we just heard, originally by REM, those of you of a certain age, remember that from college, or high school, or grade school, or sometime. Okay, stop. The term losing my religion is a southern idiom for I'm in a situation that's so bad I just don't know what to do. Or I've been so disappointed I don't know how to handle it. That's so bad I'm losing my religion. But in the last 30 or 40 years it's become something of a mantra for a whole generation or two of people who've seen how religion operates in the world, on TV, in our politics, and said, no, if that's what it is, I'm out of here. We have a generation called the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, who on the census put none for what religion do you connect to. And we can bemoan folks losing their religion. But being that so much of what religion is projecting our own stuff onto God, maybe we ought to be losing our religion. Where religion, the human construct, tries to support itself, protect itself, its rules, its narrow theologies, its moralisms, its narrow people, its buildings, its systems, its rules. And again, its tendency to baptize whatever our own personal prejudices are, maybe losing that part of our religion might open us up to be able to find true faith. I want you to think a little bit about growing up in a faith community. And are there things that you carry from that? Some kind of baggage that has kept you from having a deeper relationship with God. Not the God we project, not the God, the big bearded man in the sky, not the cosmic bubblegum machine, not the rules and regulations that are written in the stars, but God who was love made manifest. Are there things that were in the way for you? that maybe you're scared to give up because you might face disapproval or a shaking finger from a great aunt or a pastor. What if we could strip away all the idolatry so that we can simply come face to face with the simple beauty of love? The love that spoke the universe into creation. The love that breathed life into all living creatures. The love that came to us embodied in this rabbi from Nazareth. Love coming embodied, fully vulnerable to human form, to human fear, to human violence, human anger, and somehow redeemed it on a cross. Love embodied, died among us, because of us, with us, and for us. Can you lose something tonight that is in the way of that? Maybe it's a symbol, maybe it's a word, maybe it's some bit of religious baggage or religious wounding that you have in some corner of your mind that keeps you from opening yourself up to this love beyond words. I'm going to invite you to reflect for a few moments on what some of that might be. What aspects of religious idolatry can you let go of in order to find true faith in love incarnate? And then I invite you to come and write it down in, I think, the safest way possible. Is to write it in the sand. What's the name of your baggage? What's the name of your stuff? What's the name of your woundedness? And to write that in the sand. And look at it for a moment. And then erase it so it's just with you. So come as the Spirit moves, that we might perhaps lose a little religion and gain a little faith.
Then the soldiers led him into the courtyard of the palace, that is, the governor's headquarters. And they called together the whole cohort. And they clothed him in a purple cloak, and after twisting some thorns into a crown, they put it on him. And they began saluting him, "Hail, King of the Jews." They struck his head with a reed, spat upon him, knelt down in homage to him. After mocking him, they stripped him of the purple cloak and put his own clothes on him. And they led him out to crucify him.
And this is the judgment, that the light has come into the world, and people loved darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. For everyone who does evil hates the light.
It was 9 o'clock in the morning when they crucified him. And the inscription of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." And with him they crucified two bandits, one on his right and one on his left.
Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani.